From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in No Cost, Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Steve McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy. I, too, make nice games. For this week's episode, our topics are games for free and joy versus fun. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start. Ellen, grade me on that intro performance.
You spoke so quickly. You spoke so quickly, and there was so much music left.
I know. I did kind of rush at the top, I thought.
I thought you were doing it on purpose just to, like, trigger me.
Well, now I have that. I can put that in my quiver for later.
The Global Game Jam is happening. Soon?
It happened.
It has happened by the time you were listening to this episode, yes. But
right.
It hasn't happened for us.
But us here in the distant past, we have yet to Global Game Jam.
It's kind of weird that we're in like this weird like period of time that's 3 weeks removed from when the episode comes out.
It's been a while since we've recorded new episodes, and Steven's forgot how it works.
Yeah.
We call that weird period calendar math.
Yeah. right. But it's just... I don't know. It's weird talking to yourself in the future.
We do find ourselves in a position where we're like, hey, we should talk about this thing that's happening. Oh,
yeah.
It's not going to matter.
Yeah, because it'll happen. It'll have happened already.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's coming up. We should talk about what our plans are for Global Game Jam.
Yeah, I was going to ask you the same thing, Mark.
Well, I'm helping to run it for the Twin Cities IGDA chapter, and we partnered with Amber Waves of Games, which is a cool name for a cool organization, which is a sort of a Midwest game dev collective. It's a Discord server, and we're going to be co-hosting the Global Game Jam with them and using their server to run it and manage teams. So we're sort of partnering with that organization. So it's old news for those who participated, but it's kind of cool because it means we get a little bit of like support from another institution, and it feels a little bit more, and also everyone's accountable to each other in a cool way. So I hope that'll work out. We were going to do it live in person. We're going to partner with 2DCon, which is a local convention here in the Twin Cities. They're doing a board game convention, sort of a much smaller version of their yearly convention called 2DCon Unplugged.
Oh.
And that is still happening. Mm-hmm. And we were going to partner with them to set off one of the rooms in the space for Global Game Jam. But as the board met last month, and we decided, no, let's just do virtual only this year again.
Sure.
And so it was kind of a... It felt a little last minute, actually, but it was the right call.
Yeah.
And hopefully, to those folks who already went through it, it went well.
Yeah.
As for what I'm going to do, I don't know.
You don't know. Yeah.
I really don't. Every year it's that now. It's like, do I really want to make another weekend game? Like, I always do. But I'm like, or do I want to use that time for something else, jam on some particular component, or... And then I kind of get too in my own head about it, and then I do something completely, like I decided the last minute what I'm going to use the time for.
Yeah.
What about you, Ellen?
I was just thinking how America the Beautiful would be such a better national anthem.
So Ellen has checked out.
No, I just, Amber Waves of Games is such a good name for an organization.
Yeah.
But then it got me thinking about Amber Waves of Grain, which is a lyric from the song, America the Beautiful, which is just such... a prettier song than, you know, Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah.
And probably easier to see.
It's also less about war.
Yeah, wouldn't that that'd be great?
Too. Yeah, it would be nice.
Yeah.
It's about amber waves of games.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm also not going to sing that as the lyrics from now on, I have the opportunity to sing that.
Okay, but your Global Game Jam plans.
So I was thinking I want to do more Godot stuff, as I keep mentioning, and I did not get any Godot stuff done over the hiatus, which is okay, because I did other things. But what I was thinking of doing is just kind of seeing what the theme is, and then just going out and finding a tutorial that feels theme-ish, and then just following that tutorial and maybe reskinning the assets or something, just to kind of make it my own, do practice on a couple different fronts.
Cool. So you're looking to go solo?
I'm not sure.
Yeah?
I'm not sure. If it's going to be a learning experience, then probably I'll need to. But maybe I'll see if I can track down artists and sound folks, and maybe they could take care of the other things while I work on actually building the thing.
Yeah. One of the things an in-person jam is useful for is walking in without knowing what your team's going to be.
Right.
It's much, much easier when you can just walk between tables and stuff.
Yeah.
It can't quite be replicated virtually.
No.
We're doing our best, I think. Hopefully we'll get some team management going in the Discord server, but I don't expect it to be as as useful as it is in person.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, that is one of the things that's so cool about Global Game Jam is when you're, like, up out there and you're pitching your idea. And we'll see. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of where I'm leaning right now is doing something like that. And then whether or not it'll be with other people, I think is something that'll depend on the theme and what I can find.
Yeah.
You know, is that a really feel like I do want to advance my development skills in that engine, mm-hmm. but I also don't feel confident enough in the engine to be able to like feel like a contributing member of a team, that is building a game that hasn't been defined, you know? So,
because you don't want someone who comes in with an attitude that expects different of you, right?
Well, if you have like an idea from a game and it's really cool and I want to build it, I also just don't know if I can build it, you know? Yeah. Like, and I don't know what I don't know. And
I will submit to you, Ellen, that is what a jam is for.
That's true.
And I think you could find some people who would be like interested in taking that same journey with you, mm-hmm. either with different disciplines or with you learning Godot.
Yeah. Yeah, but the thing is, like, one of the things I've also heard over and over again is like, maybe a game jam isn't the first time you want to open up the engine.
Well, it would be your second.
Exactly. So it's not the first time I would have opened it up, but I was still not familiar enough with the tool to like really, I feel like, be able to use it on the fly. If someone like puts boards on a table saw in front of me, mm-hmm. I can use the table saw and I can cut boards and I can do a lot, even though I haven't done a lot with the table. Like, I can cut straight lines with it. I can cut different depths of lines with it. I know I can.
Well, because you're extremely handy. Right.
Well, and I've used table saws a few times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not like an expert woodworker, but like I can use a table saw and make cuts and things like that. And if we had like table jam, where your tools by the end of this period of time you had to have a table, like yeah, I could do that, mm-hmm. you know. But like and I could figure out whatever tools you give me, I'd be able to make a table. I don't.
Someone
know
put that together.
Table jam.
to use a phrase.
Yeah.
To use
table jam. Yeah, anyway. But
well, I submit to you that a lot of that is naysaying, and I think you should dream big and fail hard.
Great, like, you can be on my team.
Oh man. you know, I would actually like to be on a team where I don't touch a single line of code.
Cool.
That would be kind of fun.
There we go, team. You can do the music and the art, and I'll do the code.
Okay. Steven, you want to join our team? Unless you have plans.
My plans is to not... I don't know. Like, I want to do a game jam this year because mm-hmm. it's been a long time since I've done a game jam. Yeah. But I don't know that I want to do the global game jam. It's just so early in the year, I think. I don't know. I'm still waking
it's
up from holidays.
Too cold or something? Like,
what?
Too cold or?
It's cold.
It's inside.
I don't know. It's like.
You're just not ready. But what about?
Yeah, I'm not mentally ready yet.
I mean, it's not this weekend. It's next weekend. Yeah. You got like a whole week.
Uh-huh. Yep.
You know, what we could do is we could get a couple of folks who are sort of already in our bubbles mm-hmm. and host it here. That we don't all have to be on the same team or anything, mm-hmm. but we could use the office here as a space.
We could.
Yeah, were I to participate in Global Game Jam, I definitely would have worked out of here because it would have just been nice to do it somewhere different.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, put you in that. It's one of the, it's like, you know, it's a summer camp kind of idea. Put you in a space.
Yeah.
You know, literally.
And bring Pixel in.
I do also need to start like prepping for my move. So, I mean, I don't have that much stuff, but I still need to, like, wipe things down. So, I don't know. Maybe not this year.
Okay. Well, Ellen, you and I can talk about it, and then we can pressure Steven. See if we can get it done.
I think Steven's going to have a role, whether he likes it or not. It's just, like, your role might be, Steven, we need a pep talk. Go.
Yeah, I can do that.
Or, like, Steven, what should we have for lunch? Go.
Yeah, I can pick up stuff for
you. You know, Steven, it would be really great if you wanted to serve as, like, a producer role.
Ooh.
Because I know you've always had admiration for the type of person who can do that on a jam team.
Yeah.
And I think you'd be good at it.
Oh, okay. Dang it. That's a good pitch.
What if it's just the two of us? Would we need one?
Would we need a producer?
Sure.
To keep us in line? Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I'll think about it.
Okay.
I don't know yet.
That's a good podcast level response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so easy to be like, oh, the two of you, I love you both. Like, let's be on a team together. But part of me is like, Global Game Jam is supposed to meet new people and do new things.
Yeah, but
I know, right?
We are doing new things.
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing new things.
Well, I'll get to at least peek inside Godot.
Yeah.
I won't write a line of code. I'm saying that now. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to happen, but I would.
So that's Steven's job. Steven, Mark is trying to touch the code. Tell him no.
Right. I can do that. I can yell at Mark. I'm good at that.
Okay, perfect.
Cool.
Welcome to the team.
Wait.
Ooh, almost. You almost got the high five on
I know. You almost got me. The high five was tempting.
Just the prospect of yelling at me was enough.
Yeah.
Too tempting.
Yeah. There's like, I mean, there are, like, you're a polymathic individual. Like, you've done sound design and music, and you've done, you know, lots and lots of art, but like, you can always do new stuff in that vein.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe one of the things that the theme will push us to do is to like constrain those aspects of the game in an interesting way. So yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting actually. So from where we're sitting, the theme is already revealed because Global Game Jam is a in order to make it more flexible for hybrid spaces and virtual spaces.
Oh.
It's from the 20th to the 30th. And so you choose a couple of days to do your own version of it.
Got
and so
it.
You're just, you know, it's always been an honor system anyway because it's a global game jam, so the theme gets revealed, you know, around the world. So you know, if you want to find out what the theme is in advance, it's not really breaking the rules.
Well, I'm going to look it up right now because where the people are listening, it's going to already have happened. So I'm going to look it up.
And then you'll spoil it for you.
We'll spoil ourselves for the sake of it.
Well, I want to look up a good tutorial, but you're right. Okay, I'll wait. Okay.
Well, we'll report back in, I suppose, our next episode on how we thought we did.
Yeah.
So last week, I talked all about how I was re-obsessed with David Bowie, and I monopolized a big part of the show to talk about that.
Okay. I would call it a monopolize.
And it's such a shame, because normally I do that for Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought this week I could talk about Star Trek for a little bit.
Oh.
So just a couple days ago from where we're sitting, you know, Paramount revealed all the premiere dates for all the Star Trek series that are going on this year. And it's quite a lot. What's so interesting is when Star Trek started up again in 2017, some executive was quoted by like Variety or something as saying, our goal is to have Star Trek airing every week all year round. And I remember thinking, like, TV seasons are like 13 episodes. Like, you'd have to produce like 5 or 6 Star Trek series at a time for that to happen.
Yeah.
I didn't take it seriously. So right now there are 6 Star Trek series in production.
Excellent.
and they're doing it.
Oh, that's pretty good.
It's kind of incredible. Yeah. So Prodigy is airing right now. From where we're sitting. And when you listen to this, Discovery will be back up. And then Picard comes out right after that. And then Strange New Worlds right after that.
Goodness.
And then Lower Decks comes back for season 3 right after that. And then Prodigy for the second half of its first season comes on after that.
Oh, my goodness. Second half of
And then by season. Then, Discovery season 5 will be coming out.
What? That's year-long Star Trek.
Yeah. Also, did I mention? Yeah, Picard is third season is coming out next year too.
Oh,
Strange New Worlds was renewed for a second season. It hasn't even aired its first yet.
What?
Lower Decks got renewed for a fourth season.
Oh my goodness!
Discovery got renewed for a fifth. All the Star Trek shows got renewed for one more season,
Star
more than
Trek
we've seen already.
Is blowing up.
It's kind of incredible. It's really a great time. I mean, maybe it's not your favorite Star Trek, if you're like an old fan and you're a little bit, you know, stubborn about as is always the case, it's still just amazing. There's just so much new Star Trek. It's so exciting.
It's gonna be like Chicago Med. Almost. It's like that now.
Yeah, like all those crossovers.
Yeah. Dang.
You really like Prodigy, though, right?
I don't tell the listeners that, Mark. The gag is I don't like Star Trek.
I know. But you do like Prodigy.
No, I love it. It's a great show.
He does not like Worf, who's not in Prodigy yet.
That's a benefit for me. Right. Oh, yeah. Why would you say yet?
Because you never know.
Could be.
I actually love the idea of having, like, mentor daddy old man Worf, like, with a bunch of space kids.
Oh man, that'd be so fun.
And they'd drive him crazy.
Oh, and he'd be like, no, I have a lesson about honor today, and they're all like running around pressing buttons.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be pretty funny. Yeah.
That is not the thing I tasked you to do.
Yep.
Whatever.
So we forced Steven to watch Star Trek 6 last week, and I think you said, like, well, at least Worf's not in it. Surprise! Worf is in that movie. A Worf is in that movie. Star Trek fans know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was something.
Yeah.
That was something.
All right, what do you say we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it. My topic is games for free.
What does that mean?
That's a good question. I'm talking about not just like games that you literally got for free because Epic was like, here's a free game this month. But also, like, games on the Xbox Game Pass, you don't technically get those for free because you have to pay for the Game Pass. Mm-hmm. But, you know, more games are added to the Game Pass all the time. So those games you get.
Games where they come your way, not by your individual purchasing decision.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Well, and ultimately, if you were paying game by game, you know, you'd be spending a lot less or a lot more than what you're spending on the Game Pass itself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
So, okay.
Like, effectively free, almost. It's a different kind of model than has existed in the past, right?
Yeah.
Most games don't get given away for free. I suppose there were, like, literally freeware things, like, 10, 15, 20 years ago. But, like,
it's all about, like, hooking people, right? Like, shareware was designed because it was essentially advertising.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Right, right,
play the first chapter of Doom for free, and it got spread around on Usenet groups and whatever. And then, you know, send in your mail order for the
Actually, that's
chapters.
A good point. So, I mean, in that same vein, it's the same kind of thing, but it's different in that, like, they're trying to advertise their platforms more
so the psychology is similar, but, like, all the details are different.
Yes, So, like, the reason why Epic is trying to give you free games is because then you're using Epic more often, then you see more stuff, and you buy more stuff on their platform, and it makes them more money. Same with Xbox. They want more games you have on there, the more tantalizing it is to get an Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah.
So it's a different model than how a lot of indie games normally profit. And so it's like, it's weird. A lot of the money that HyperDot got was through, like, being on an Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah.
Obviously, I am not Charles, but he's told me enough about that.
Well, it's a negotiated lump sum for a period of time, 12 to 18 months usually.
Yeah.
Then it gets re-upped or it doesn't, and it's not a fixed number, but for pretty much any indie, like, even a lowball number is a lot of money,
right?
Mm-hmm. And that's you know, a guaranteed income versus, you know, taking a risk in the marketplace.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, like, beneficial, but I think that there's a lot of, like, things that aren't necessarily stated about, like, those kinds of deals. Like, specifically, you know, if you're giving your game out for free and it does gangbusters on Epic and everybody downloads it, then you don't get any of those profits. You don't see any of those profits. Epic just gets a bunch of people on their platform without you getting to see any benefits of it, aside from that lump sum you got for the initial deal.
Mm-hmm. Now, it does vary from program to program, different kinds of things. Like, like a PlayStation Plus game or something where it's free for PlayStation Plus users, you still have to buy it for $0 because the sale is logged. And then Sony pays for it.
Right.
So the developer still gets money per sale.
Oh.
And that's different.
Yeah.
And I suspect there are probably exceptions to those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But
that's a good point.
But that's different from Game Pass or, I presume, Epic, where it's just you the platform pays to give your game away.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So, like, I have not... I mean, we put Fintan's out for free, right? But it's not the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
I've never gotten a deal to, like, have a game out for free for a period of time or for forever or whatever. So I'm kind of just talking about this from, like, a hypothetical, not hypothetical, but, like, our own experiences with downloading these games or seeing what developers have said about having their games on the platforms and stuff. I guess I just wanted to, like, ask questions about, like, the benefits and the downsides.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, like, as a player, how do you feel about this business model?
Well, maybe we can talk about how, as consumers, we've engaged with those mechanisms.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yep. So, yeah, in terms of, like, benefits for this kind of thing, I, like, brainstormed some stuff. Y'all feel free to add as they come up. But I think that, like, in general, like, having your game for free means more people can play it because it doesn't cost money. You can get a decent chunk of change right away, you know, for through Epic or through Xbox or whoever,
right?
To get that, and I think there's it's a higher profile initial launch because, like, the platforms are incentivized to promote your game so more people see it and more people start getting on their platform.
Yeah, they'll feature it, and you log on for the first time that week, and you'll have a new banner saying, "This is the thing you can play now."
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's I think this is a potential, but, like, there's a potential for a longer tail after the free period, because, like, you'll have more players, and more players means more people are talking about it.
Yeah,
it's in the collective zeitgeist.
Yeah, there's a thing with hundreds of games launching every day. And dozens on consoles every day, right?
Yeah.
It's there's lots of indies. And when you release a game and you're like, okay, it's now it's part of the pantheon of video games. Mm-hmm. Well, who says?
Yeah.
And so it can just be forgotten, like a thing you spent years on. It doesn't exist anywhere. Mm-hmm. If it's on Game Pass and maybe not a lot of people download it and maybe it doesn't even sell that well when it's out, it's still part of the pantheon of video games.
Yeah.
And like that really matters for your next project.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, that long tail makes a lot of sense because something's been on Game Pass and maybe it went on Game Pass relatively unnoticed, didn't get, you know, a lot of attention. But when people are looking for a game, that one exists. It's been on Game Pass. It like it validates it in a sea of like games that are hard to differentiate for a consumer.
Right, right. And yeah, I guess as a result of like games being easier and easier to like sell and put on marketplaces, it becomes less of a notable point that your game is on Steam or on itch or whatever, you know? So I can see like you just being able to say my game was on Xbox Game Pass, using it as a bragging point and using that as a bragging point for potential funding down the line is a good thing.
Yeah.
So,
and what's interesting about that is that it has nothing to do with it, the being on Game Pass or even that Xbox made a deal with you.
Yeah.
It's that it's what being on Steam used to mean, mm-hmm. right? And so it is just a matter of in comparison to other ways you encounter games.
Yeah.
So that it can shift at any moment or as time goes on. Like, what happens if Microsoft decides, you know what, we're not going to do the 100, 120 games at a time model anymore. We're going to do the Netflix model where we just hoover up every game. And you know what I mean? Because it's not Netflix for games, right? They keep it under 150 all the time. So they rotate them out. But if they change their mind on that, then maybe it won't mean anything anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Things can change.
Yeah.
Things can change. And Microsoft is becoming more and more powerful. So.
And that is the big concern about this stuff from an indie developer is because Steven, you talk about this a lot. Like when you can get AAA games or even high-end indies for quote-unquote free, right, in terms of your individual purchase decision, then what incentive do you have to buy any games at all?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get to the downsides. I like it.
And in a world that used to be like you need to get approval from Steam or approval from a console maker to have your game even exist in the world, much less remembered, are we moving back to that now?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Whereas these platform holders control all visibility for games.
Yes.
Because nobody buys $15 games on Steam anymore.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a terrifying prospect, at least in my opinion, because I think that it's been very beneficial for people. But like, yeah, it can cause a lot of problems down the line in terms of like control of the market.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think people are talking about it and stuff. I don't think it's not like in people's minds, but I don't know that there's anything we can do to avoid it if it happens, I guess. Maybe we'll come up with something. I don't know. There's still itch. There's always itch. but anyways, yes, downsides for having your game out for free. Like, if the game sells well for free, you get none of that money on Epic and stuff. I think Mark had brought up that, like, you know, if you had it on PlayStation Plus, PlayStation will pay for each sale. But that's not always the case with every market. So
yeah. And very few – I think a couple of games have, but very few games have premiered – on Xbox Gold or PlayStation Plus. It's usually once you've gone over that first thing. So it's not – it's a secondary thing, whereas a lot of games will premiere on Game Pass.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And if your game comes out for free, like on the Game Pass or something, and later costs money, the game loses out on the best money-making period of time. Like when it first launches, that is when a lot of people have heard of it. Unless there's like a weird – thing like Among Us where like, you know, people hear about the game 5 years later and it's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
That is very rare, so don't expect that.
Yeah, it's not something you can count on.
Exactly.
It's one of those things that if you are negotiating a Game Pass deal, you have to really consider that the chunk of money you're getting now has to make up for that first week sale.
Yep.
And you have to be honest, like, am I getting a good deal out of this or am I risking a lot for this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's very true, very true.
And sometimes the certainty is worth the maybe, like, well, we could have sold more, but we'd have to do a lot of work and maybe not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, of course, we can't frame this as a matter of, like, choosing to be on Game Pass or not. You know, it's not an easy thing.
Right.
To get that offer.
Yeah, it's not easy. But, yeah. You still need to, like, think those things through. I mean, and Epic, I think, is a little more willing to have free games on the platform. So
Yeah, they do like one or two a week. I don't know exactly how it is anymore.
But I don't know. It's very frequent at any rate.
Yeah.
So yeah, like this deal might come your way, and so you'll have to consider those. I know there are a bunch of documents about like how many sales, quote unquote, that like people got on Epic versus how much money they actually made through their deal with Epic.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the exact conclusions, but from what I remember, it was not super great in from the perspective of the developer. Like, I think they could have potentially earned more money if they, you know, didn't put it out for free. But ultimately, that also means that you wouldn't have gotten as many players, so you might not have gotten as much money. You know, it's hard to know.
Yeah,
hindsight is, you know.
Whatever. Well, I even think about a game like Celeste,
yeah,
which was a big hit and it had a really long tail.
Mm-hmm.
That was free on Epic at some point, I remember, and maybe I'm alone in this, but I think about games like that, and I think about, like, oh, that's a game you could probably find for free somewhere.
Yeah.
Whereas a game on Game Pass is, like, it's on Game Pass.
Yeah.
Even amongst these different programs, there's sort of a different psychology at play in how individual games get perceived by consumers. And, like,
true.
Well, that game was free once, so I'm not going to buy it because it might be free again.
That's how a lot of people, like, view... That's how people view Steam. It's like, you know, the game was on sale for 50%. I'll just wait until it's on sale again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not great. And then also, like, if a game comes out for cost initially and then it becomes later free, I think a lot of players get upset about that because, like, they purchased it early and the game's free 3 months later.
Right.
And they're like, why did I spend all this money? I'm an early adopter. You should give me the game for free.
Because you want your developers to eat food.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you're going to get complaints.
You also got it 3 months earlier than everybody else.
I know.
Yeah.
People pick and choose their own variables in the equations there.
That's true.
Presenting. They don't put all of them in there.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that the biggest downside that I wanted to bring up is that I'm concerned about is, like, game devaluation.
Yeah.
I'm concerned that as you see more and more games becoming free, players are going to expect games to be cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like deflation or inflation? Yeah, devaluation, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm concerned about that as a developer. Obviously, because like I want to sell my games so I can make money.
Well, but making games is getting easier and easier, right?
Ah! If you've listened to this show for 5 minutes, you know that's not the case. It is easier to make a game, but it's not easier to sell a game.
And yeah, to be in the business of making games.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess I want y'all's take on it. Like, what do you... Do you see this becoming a problem, like games being free like this?
Maybe we should talk about our own spending habits and our, you know,
sure,
how we engage with these things.
Yeah, okay.
Like I have Game Pass because I got that sort of like that trick deal where you pay a dollar for like 3 years of Game Pass.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So it's even freer for me. listeners that we've talked about on the show before, but it's also you can Google it and, you know, find out what I'm talking about. And that's been nice, but I don't – maybe it's just because I don't play a lot of games, which is sort of a game developer thing. But I don't – I'm not a big consumer of those free games, and I'm very happy to buy things.
Yeah.
If I've been waiting for them.
Yeah.
I don't know that I don't do a lot of browsing Steam and then spending $20.
Yeah.
But that might just be because I don't play enough video games.
Yeah, that's interesting. I generally am not a browser of games. I usually, if I add something to my wish list, no matter what platform it's on, it's because I heard something good about it from someone that I trust. It doesn't have to be like a personal acquaintance, but like from coverage that I trust.
Mm-hmm.
Or I read a really interesting article. One of the sources of games, game recommendations that I have really leaned on in the last several months is just Reddit. Like if there's something comes up on Indie Dev or Play My Game or something that looks amazing, then I'll look at it and I'll look into it for 5 minutes and then it'll end up on my wish list, you know, which is exactly what they want.
Right.
It works on me, you guys. and then I pay for it. Like I am fortunate enough to be financially stable and have disposable income. So I spend it on things that, you know, that I think deserve it. And So I don't really wait for sales. If something's on sale on Steam and it pops up, I'll usually buy it just because it's like front of mind at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not like I'm waiting with bated breath for the Steam winter sale so I can get 50 games at like a quarter of the price. If I'm ready and I want to play a specific game, I will go get that game.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like there's a the sort of coupon clipping of game purchasing is so bizarre to me. Mm. Like, I'm not going to, and this is a luxury, I guess, of having some disposable income, but it doesn't take a lot of disposable income to make this calculation, which is that I'm not going to spend a lot of effort to manage and track to save $2.
Right.
You know, it's like, if I want the game, I will buy it.
Well, yeah, that's really interesting though, because I think for some people, and I've never been like a coupon clipper or a deal shopper,
yeah,
but some people really get a lot of satisfaction out of finding
a good
deal.
It's its own thrill,
it's
I guess.
It's its own thing. Right?
I have more respect for that
than
I do the like just the min-maxing of the dollar amount. Like the if you get enjoyment out of it, then that, and whatever, people can get enjoyment out of whatever, like enjoy your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I do find people, you know, like an indie game that's $15 and 30 and it's 33% off, which is a deep discount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's $5 off. And
right.
It's like
right.
Maybe it sounds unfair, but like it's hard to notice $5 if you're already spending it on something you didn't. It's already disposable income,
right?
Well, you're already disposing of that income. How much is $5? And that's a huge deep discount on a game.
Well, and that's where like people start putting in like the amount, the length of the game, and stuff like that. They start putting those costs in, because I think that a lot of people who need to look for deals, who are, you know, like they're actively looking for these deals, not because they find enjoyment out of it, but because they just don't have a lot of disposable income.
Yeah.
Want a lot of content out of the games they're getting. They don't want to just purchase a $15 game and get 3 hours of content because it feels like they could have spent $60 to get a game that has 100 hours of content and gotten a much better deal out of it.
Yeah.
100 hours of good content.
I mean,
that desire to quantify and atomize everything is kind of, that way lies madness, you know?
For me, at least.
But it's what happens.
No. Yeah. And I will also say that, like, my dad is kind of like that. He doesn't tend to play a lot of small games. If he plays it, he doesn't play that many games in general, really. But when he plays a game, he plays it a lot.
Right.
So, like, that's why he likes Assassin's Creed games, is because, like, there's just so much. Because
you don't need anything else in your life.
Yeah, really. And so, like, I've seen him play that, and I've heard from other people, too, that, like, it's difficult to, like, rationalize purchasing a smaller game for a cheaper
price. Right, because their game's budget is, like, $60 a year.
Exactly.
And they still get thousands of hours of gameplay for
sense.
A year.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that puts you in a state.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This is intellectual. I'm not saying this should be obvious to everybody.
Yeah.
But if you really do examine your own kind of behavior, think of like, well, I spent $2 on a can of Coke or something that was maybe a little overpriced at a baseball game or something.
Yeah.
But then I also...
$2.
I'm trying to find an example. But,
sure.
But I also spent $5 on an 8-ounce cup of Coke at a restaurant.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there are times in your life where you don't make those calculations about what a thing is worth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more tools that platforms give you to make those calculations, the more people feel that they need to engage in that kind of thing.
Oh.
And I think that's... I don't know. I'm not trying to argue that obfuscation is the answer.
Yeah.
But it just seems to me that there's too many tools. Mm. You know what I mean? For players, then they treat it like it's a system they have to play and win at.
Yeah.
And I think that puts people in a mindset that gets frustrating, I think, for developers particularly or especially, but also for players who probably spend way more of their time shopping than they actually would like to.
You know, it's interesting. There's a platform out there for artists called Ko-Fi, and I have a friend who is on that platform, and I'll link her stuff in the show notes, Jolly Jawbreaker. And she's on Ko-Fi, and I support her with like the equivalent of like a Patreon thing. Like I give her like a monthly subscription, but you can also like purchase their stuff. And one of the things that was really interesting about this platform when I first started poking around on it was that they do quantify things, and they quantify like your purchase in the context of a different thing. And I always find that really useful, like as a consumer, to quantify or to like think about something that I'm thinking about buying in terms of something that's generally pretty fixed.
Right,
so on Ko-Fi, they're like, this, you know, like buy them a thing or just send them a couple of dollars. This is the equivalent of a cup of coffee. And it's like, okay, do you feel emotionally attached to this artist more than you feel emotionally attached to a Starbucks?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and one of the things that I often do with games is like compare it to the cost of going to a movie. Mm-hmm. You know, like cost of going to a movie, it's like 2 or 3 hours, depending on whether you skip the previews or not. And it's going to cost you like, what, $10, $15 to go by yourself and $20, $30, depending, you know, snacks or whatever. And then if you think about that, it's like, well, gosh, I spend a lot of money on movies. Like when you go to a movie, you're spending a lot of dollars per minute on your entertainment. And it's, for me, movies are really hit or miss as far as emotional intensity and like the emotional reward of the experience versus games, which are just, and I know what I like with games.
Like if you saw a bad movie, who walks out of a movie at the credits and then asks for their money back? Like it's not a common, you know what I mean? You're like, oh, that movie was terrible, but no, and like, I wasted my time, but nobody says they wasted their money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I like that comparing it to other things, because what all you place is this internal system of like, this is how much a Steam game is worth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then your brain forgets how much a dollar is worth. Mm-hmm. And so those tools, I mean, it's the same like, you know, for the price of a cup of coffee, you know, you could help a child, you know, that kind of advertising.
Yeah.
It really works because it forces you to think of these, not like how much would I spend on something I spend $0 on right now, which is infinitely more than I currently spend on it.
Right.
And so that's what, when you're trying to convince someone to buy something that they don't need.
Right.
But when you compare it to other things that they would also like, well, think about it as hard as you think about, you know, getting the supersized fries or whatever, right, rather than the medium size.
My indie game costs as much as a large mac and cheese at Noodles & Company.
Yeah.
We're roughly $10.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's not a new thought, but like, it's incredible how hard it is to convince people to spend that much money.
I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Mac and cheese is pretty good.
That's true.
Well, okay. So I will also say that in general, I hate having a lot of games. Because like I also don't tend to play a lot of games at a time. I will play a game for a long time. I guess I have similar habits to my dad. I just play more games than him.
Yeah.
And so I find it annoying to like have like if I'm there's rare point in the time when I'm like I'm actively looking for a game to play. I find it annoying to just have a giant list of games to look
at. Yeah. A lot of people have that like because they bought everything on sale, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, there was the Humble Bundle stuff. You bought the 30 games out of Humble Bundle, but you really just wanted this one, and it was a good deal for the one game.
You very much don't want to find yourself in that situation.
Yes.
So you don't really download the free games from Epic?
No, I, in fact, actively avoid doing that. Unless I want the game, I don't do it. Like, I downloaded Shadow of Tomb Raider and Rise of Tomb Raider because I wanted to play those, and I'm slowly going through them. But yeah, I don't like doing that because it's just like, I'm never going to play this game. There's no reason for me to download it.
Yeah.
My brother has like the opposite direction or the opposite opinion in that like he will download all those games because he will eventually try them because he likes to play a lot of different games.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I guess what I'm saying is like, I don't know. I think that there is some value in having access to all of these games for free. I think there's a lot of value in it because like, you know, not everybody has the ability to just pick up a game easily. I know that like the $10 thing with Noodles & Company is, you know, not that expensive, but like it is sometimes a calculation for people.
It
can be a calculation for people at different times.
Yeah,
just because, you know, I don't know, life's hard. It's still pandemic. I think people having access to all these games for cheap is good for a lot of, for like just in general getting people to play games and experience a bunch, have new experiences with these games,
yeah,
I think is really valuable. But personally, I'm like, I don't want any of these games. There's too many games.
So
I'm
you
just
do,
not interested.
You do not have the soul of a dragon then.
No.
Because, like, I just love hoarding things, like books, specifically books and games.
Yeah.
And I want them in my Steam library because it makes me feel like I have this virtual pile of things that are mine. Oh. If I ever play them, I do want to play them, and I tell myself I'll eventually get to them, but there is a little bit of happiness that comes from having the pile. And like, why am I have such a huge library of books, even though I haven't read a lot of them? Like,
oh, see, I'm kind of in between the two of you. So I used to like make sure I check every month for those PlayStation Plus games, because or else you won't be able to download them.
Yeah.
And I've stopped caring anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because it's hard to, you get the psychology of like, you feel like you lose something if you don't download them.
Right, exactly.
And that can be, and I've fallen prey to that a lot.
Yeah.
But I've gotten over that quite a bit. But in terms of like my library, one of the reasons like PlayStation or Steam has, or Epic rather, I've been pretty comfortable downloading those for free is because I don't curate either of those libraries.
Sure.
But when I do have a library I curate, I can't have one thing sticking out like a sore thumb, like some game I'm not interested in.
Yeah.
Like, it's it has to be... So either I need everything, or I need only my favorites.
Yeah. Mm.
And so right now, my Steam library is like a third of it is stuff I'm not super interested in. I've played most of it. I don't have a huge Steam library.
Yeah.
But it feels very unnerving to me to have this like, it's like it's yeah. not it doesn't feel like my library.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Who yeah. put this here? Bizarro Mark?
Yeah, because of what these there weren't all choices I made.
Right. Mm-hmm. Cuz you got them off the dang bundle and it's like 30 yeah. yes that. Yes.
Yeah. But I will say I do uh-huh. like I do appreciate the like a Game Pass or an Epic.
Yeah.
The ability to try something that people have been talking about.
Yes. Oh, I was going to say, when a game is free, it's kind of in the collective's mindset for a little while.
Yes.
The collective being all of humans, not like Borgs. if that was unclear.
Bringing it back to Star Trek, I love it.
Man. Yeah, but like it's on people's minds for a little while, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like you can kind of have a conversation about it again, or for the first time if it just came out.
Yeah.
Which is that's cool because it's very difficult to get. It's very difficult to penetrate all of the things that people are hearing, mm-hmm. and actually get people to think about it. Just like by releasing a game anymore, so. Having the game be free for a little while, puts it in people's minds.
Yeah,
which is
neat. It helps the individual join the zeitgeist.
Yes,
and then because of that, it then helps the game stay in the zeitgeist.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So there's that. Then that's a benefit to it, which I think is important. Yeah, I don't know. I realize we didn't come to any conclusions on this, but it's like
it was an exploration of the topic.
I feel like we're out of time, I think, but like the other angle to this is like what free games do for platforms.
Yeah.
Like, why it's actually important that Epic is giving away games because there needs to be a Steam competitor.
Yeah.
Game Pass is a different kind of argument, but it exists because Microsoft is losing this generation.
Mm.
And so that's maybe it's a good thing. So it's and those are completely different sets of motivations and different players in that space, to use a phrase.
Yeah, I think we'd have to go into details about Epic specifically or the Game Pass specifically.
Yeah.
There will be a part two of this episode.
Yes. As with all of our episodes.
We would call it Games for Freer.
We'll workshop that.
Okay.
Game Freer, Die Hard. Nope. Okay.
What do we have to say about the feedback form?
What have we said that hasn't been said already? Steven?
Go to it? No, we say that.
We say that every time.
Yeah, nicegames.club/feedback.
Oh, we read it. We do read it. Have we said that?
We do, yes. actually, that's a good point. We read the feedback that people send on the feedback form.
Have we gone this whole time without explaining why we want people to do this?
No, I'm pretty sure we say that we want to hear from you all.
Yeah.
In case you have ideas about what we should cover on the show.
Or, right.
Who should, make better jokes. Probably me. and also, you should have this person on. Or I would love to have more Nice Games jams or more interviews, whatever. Those are things we would also like to hear. But you can also use the feedback form to just kind of say what's up, like happy birthday, which happened also.
Yes.
So it's the feedback is important. We want to iterate off of it, and it's a helpful thing to get our curiosity and interest sparked in a new direction. But we like to hear from you, regardless of what comments you have. And if you have something that you're really interested in and you want to hear more about it, tell us about it.
Yeah.
And we do read everything that comes in.
Yes.
And we've got some stuff to share, right?
Yeah. We should probably be better about reading these on the air because it's good stuff. So one suggestion that somebody brought up was they said, I think it would be cool to occasionally listen QA or topics possibly sourced by Patreon. So maybe people would send us questions to answer on here.
That'd be sweet. That would be cool.
I mean, if you have any of those you'd like us to address, feedback form is a place to do it until we come up with something more official. Yes. That's a very good idea.
Yeah. Mm. So let us know at nicegames.club/feedback.
So I want to talk about joy versus fun.
Are they battling it out? This is it?
Two implacable foes.
Why does everything have to be combat related.
You named this topic.
Shoot, I did.
Also, I'm on the show.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to talk about joy and fun as they exist in the emotional universe as different words but related feelings.
I'm much less interested now, but okay.
Okay.
It's got to be punchy, so Steven will be into it.
Yeah.
I mean, literally punchy.
Steven, cover your ears.
Okay. No.
Okay, so why did I want to talk about this? I think specificity in language is something to me that feels like a double-edged sword because I think when it comes to design and also sometimes in communication, you know, being really specific with your language, with your wording, and the type of experience that you want to create is helpful when you're designing, when you're trying to keep yourself on track with what you want to create, and also when you're trying to communicate your vision to others.
Right.
Now, if language were enough in terms of expression, we wouldn't have art, right? So
That's a really great way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
I really like that.
Cool.
sorry to interrupt you. That was great.
No, that's okay. The idea of specificity in language, like the phrase specificity in language I always connected it to this book, but it might not actually be in the book verbatim. I think it is, though, and that is The Giver.
Oh.
And many people have read The Giver as like a piece of young adult fiction.
Yeah.
And in this dystopian world, the word love isn't used between family members anymore, and then one of the characters actually uses it with their father figure, and the dad just kind of laughs at him. He's like, "What the heck do you mean by that?"
Yeah,
you know. And I just loved that. I loved that scene from that book so much because it really captures the double-edged sword that language can be when you're using it to describe emotional experiences. Because while you want that specificity so that people know what you're talking about, when it comes to like the human experience, it's not enough to capture it, right? So sometimes when you're trying to be specific, it can get in the way of actually feeling the thing.
Mm.
So I wanted to talk about this because I try not to actively dissect games while I'm playing them. I really try to just be present and feel the things and have those feels and things.
Yeah.
Wow. Speaking of specificity in language. I try not to do that while I'm playing because then I'm not really playing anymore. Then it's an academic exercise. But on the flip side, as a designer, I really like dissecting things because it helps me become a better designer. And it helps me become a better communicator, which helps me become a better designer.
Right.
So I wanted to take this time to kind of like get the pins out and poke these words and slice them open a bit. This is getting gross. And just like think in detail, like what do we mean when we say joy and what do we mean when we say fun and how do those things overlap and what does that mean for us when we're designing? And I wanted to grab joy and fun because this is where, you know, when we're talking about game design, fun is like the word that is always the starting point.
Yeah.
So I thought it might be an interesting way to just kind of start thinking about these in detail.
Fun, I think, has kind of warped into like a like a finish line you cross as a designer.
Hmm.
Like it's a state you achieve with your design. And I feel it's a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing. Mm-hmm. And so speaking of specificity, I like to say that like, yeah, this game was fun, but like I feel like the word enjoy makes more sense. It's a more like I enjoyed this experience because you can enjoy something that's not fun.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's semantic, and that's kind of what you're driving at.
Yeah.
But it's important, I think, as I know, Steven, you've talked about games like having the burden of having to be fun.
Right, absolutely.
And I think that as we talk about them, if we talk about them in a different way, then that might open up people's sort of like imaginations to having things that are satisfying or fulfilling or necessary in an experience rather than aiming at this sort of like, is this fun?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which isn't to say that games would be a lot less fun in that kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
Just that wouldn't be the prime goal.
Yeah.
And joy, I think, is a phrase that is not as tarnished by that context.
Yeah.
Right.
I suspect.
But I think it has a similar connotation, I think, in some ways. Like,
yeah.
Joy is happiness, right? That's what the definition of it is?
Well, according to dictionary.com.
Hey.
Okay.
Joy is a noun.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And it is described as the emotion of great delight or happiness caused by something exceptionally good or satisfying. Oh. Keen pleasure or elation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't always feel keen pleasure or elation playing games, but I still like the game. Like,
yeah.
Alien Isolation. Not fun. I would not use fun to describe that game. Yeah. And I'm sorry, developers, if that's what you were going for, I'm sorry that I cannot tell you that you met that that goalpost. But you did make a very engaging game and one that I am immensely satisfied with the time that I spent playing it.
Yeah.
But fun to me kind of carries a connotation of positivity and like lightheartedness, which Alien Isolation did not have. And that was fine because I didn't expect it to.
Right.
But also, you have fun and you find joy. And so I feel that's a little different.
Ooh.
Like in that it becomes more about actions, right? This feels fun, whereas I found joy in this scary experience, right? Even though joy itself is even more associated with sort of higher spirits, and it's like super fun, I guess you could say.
Sure.
But I feel in the way that we use those phrases, it feels to me like you can find joy in something that is challenging or struggling as a topic, not, I don't mean as difficulty. And whereas fun is much more about like a roller coaster.
Interesting. Yeah. Like you can have fun at a football game, but you don't feel joy until they get a touchdown or something.
I mean, you could find joy in the spirit of competition, even if your team got crushed.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sorry, Packers.
That's interesting because, well, I'm biased. I hate scary things. Uh-huh. So I can't imagine a world in which I would ever find fun or discover joy in.
That's why I use that example, because I also don't like horror games.
Yeah.
But it's still technically possible to find joy in that this is a really well-designed thing, and that I found joy in knowing that.
I found joy in apart from the game.
And I might be narrowing a specificity that's unique to me, but like.
Well, I mean, I.
Feels to me joy is more about me, and fun is about the game.
Oh. That's an interesting way of framing it. Huh. That's. Okay.
I'm also like staking a position here. I don't know if I'm supposed to be doing that.
Well, I think the whole point is to stake a position so we can push against it and find out where we end up, right?
Well, when you're thinking about how these, you know, what the versus is in these two terms, how do you define these? Or define the relationship between them,
rather? Yeah, I really feel like fun is something that can stretch. You can use it to describe a period of time that's a little bit longer than a moment of joy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think you can have like 2 hours of joy.
Mm.
I think it really is kind of like a intense, fleeting kind of feeling, whereas fun is something that you kind of describe as at a more activity level where there are ups and downs and things like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, you can find joy in a fun experience.
Right, because joy is the thing you can put in a box. Like, it doesn't stay with you, right?
Right. So, like, maybe I found moments of joy in Alien Isolation when I was running and then made my escape, or, like, finally figured out how to throw the sound maker to distract the alien, and I snuck out the other direction and made it. Like,
just the smile on your face.
I'm not really sure that's joy, though. It was more just like relief. Relief in the context of a game feels like joy, maybe. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel like you can have a sense of joy just like walking down the street, and then like your understanding and observations of what's going on around you kind of clicks in a way that you feel joy
but
at
you
what you're
would
seeing.
Would not describe that as fun.
No, I wouldn't necessarily.
I was saying that not necessarily for you, but I think that a person likely would not describe it as fun. This is interesting now that I'm thinking about it, because like I got in an argument. I guess it wasn't exactly an argument. It was a discussion.
He guesses.
Well, it wasn't my brother, so I know it wasn't necessarily
an
argument.
That was my next question. Was it your brother?
No, it wasn't.
It was not certainly an argument.
And the second thing is the next topic will be discussion versus argument.
No, I got in a conversation with a friend where like we talked about when you like really start getting really good at games, they become not fun to play.
Yeah,
and I had a beef with that statement, because it was like you can still in order for you to like be good at a game, you have to like stop having fun in it. And to me, that felt wrong, because it felt like you getting better at the game is part of the fun, or at least you can find enjoyment out of getting better at the game and practicing and like putting what you've practiced into actual gameplay.
Well, what is fun changes, probably.
Exactly. And he had argued that like that wasn't the act of like getting better and practicing and like, you know, changing your mindset so that you stop like doing the cool, exciting stuff, like the flashy combos and stuff, and start like doing the boring footsies, which isn't boring, but anyway, stuff like in order to like win more games, is you lose aspects of fun as a result of that. And I kind of had a hard time arguing against that, because it's like, it's true that like practicing a combo for hours on end so you won't drop it when you're in, you know, in the heat of combat isn't particularly fun. At least I don't find it fun. Mm-hmm. I think some people might find that at least engaging, but I don't know that necessarily people would find it fun. Mm-hmm. But there is some joy in being able to execute the combo so well that, like, you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, you can find joy in, like, doing those kinds of actions, but I don't know that you would have fun doing it.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you brought that up because I really don't like grinding in games.
Yeah.
The only time that it is somewhat palatable is when there's, like, a lot of people around, like, socialize, because the socializing is fun.
Yeah, sure.
So depending on the game and how much grinding it requires of me, the grind can be a little fun. Mm-hmm. But I really think that when my suspicion is when game designers use the term fun, I really think they mean engaging.
Yeah.
And I don't know if engagement as a word is, like, from a game designer's perspective, been kind of, like, tainted by the field of UX. Mm. But, like, it really does feel like something else to me because, you know, there are games where you can just zone out and you're not really feeling much of anything. You're just doing the thing. And it captures a part of your brain that likes doing stuff. And that's as much as you need. That's fine for you. But it's not really fun.
Right.
And you're not really checked into the experience.
Well, and I think that's what a lot of game designers are asking for. It's not just engagement, but, like, checking into the experience.
Yeah.
Enjoying it.
Yeah. So, like, well, it's actually one of the things I always really liked about Warframe was just because the movement around the space was just such a blast. Mm. It always felt like fun, even though I'm going through, like, the same four levels over and over again for much of the game. And another thing that was interesting about, like, Mario Odyssey specifically, because it's the most recent Mario game that I've played, fun. Even though, like, you just everything was so different all the time. You're using the same movements and everything, but you're never rehearsing anything over and over again unless you're trying to beat a specific puzzle.
You know, it's interesting you bring that one up because I think, and this might be my criticism of Mario Odyssey, is Mario Odyssey is every bit of it, every moment of it is fun the first time you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But if you have to try it a second time, it very quickly becomes work.
Yeah.
Yes.
In a way that other Mario games don't as much.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. This is my issue with Mario games in general.
I agree with that.
Is that, like, you can't really get, well, I mean, you can in that, like, you can speed run it and people are, like, near professional speedrunners or whatever. But you can't really get better at a Mario game in a way that I enjoy, that I like.
Mm.
That you respect.
That, too. I guess that's fair.
Because those are the types of games I'm good at.
Okay. You can't disagree with that, I think.
But there's, like, nothing wrong with being just, you know, like, not necessarily having fun with a game, but being engaged with the game in pursuit of that joyful moment when you actually are able to execute.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Like, I had that with Thoth. Mm. Very grindy, quote unquote, and then, like, it was just so hard to beat some of those later levels and just try them over and over again. But, like, I was engaged.
Right.
I wouldn't say I was necessarily having fun.
Mm.
I was swearing a lot, but I was 100% engaged.
So some fun.
There weren't any explosions. So.
Wow.
I was 100% engaged.
Yeah.
Like, really, really, like, laser focused on trying to live through these shapes and squares and sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really feel, and I don't really know if I really had fun. I was just committed to doing this. And then when I finally got it, it was, like, a very intense, joyful experience.
Mm-hmm.
Triumphant, I guess.
Yeah.
Got those shapes. I show those squares who's boss. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That's interesting about Mario, because the thing is, I haven't played Mario Odyssey over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I only went through it just the once because I loved the novelty of it in every single area.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of Mario games, like, focus on the novelty of each individual level and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
whereas, like, I got every moon.
Yeah.
And so it's designed to be a challenge.
Yes.
But there's the dividing line between casual playthrough and going for stuff is much, much more clear, I think, in that game than in other Mario games.
Well, right. And in the movement, this is an aside, but the movement in that game did not carry it enough to make it as interesting as it would have, at least for me, as like other Mario games. So, 3D Mario games. So that's a decide.
Hmm. Yeah.
I think that's fascinating because it's like, in Mario games, like, everything that Mario does is joyful, right? Like,
oh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all of the sounds, all of the colors, all of the animations and stuff, they're all joyful, but they don't necessarily translate into fun. Especially if you do it a lot and see it a lot.
Now we're really just in the realm of like personal preference.
Well, now we are, yeah.
That's you know, which is fine. I mean, that's a big part of why when people say like, as a designer, you need to find the fun, feels really weird to me.
Yeah,
because like who. Fun for who?
Right.
Like, I think there's not enough of a respect for different people's preferences. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of game design is about how do we crack this nut and make sure that it's fun for people.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you can...
good emphasis. Like, yeah. Fun for people.
Humans.
Yeah.
I mean, just the vast number of popular games that I don't like is proof enough that there's no way to solve the equation.
Well, absolutely, though. Yeah.
Right. And I think we should stop trying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Know? Yeah.
I always thought that find the fun was like a very personal directive. Like, if it's got to be fun for you, otherwise it's not going to be fun for anyone. So at least at the very start, you got to find fun for you.
See, it's interesting because a lot of times, especially as we talk about like playtesting and iteration, it's much less about the designer's own preferences.
Yeah.
That's very much drilled into. I mean, we do it here on the show too, about making sure you test things.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What you test against is something you have a lot of control over. And I don't think people realize they have as much control as they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They think that they're going to some platonic ideal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, this all changes when you're talking about a marketplace and you need to sell it to people who aren't you.
Yeah.
Then you do need to find the fun so other people will purchase the game.
But that's why joy is an interesting, and it might just be because it's not as overused.
Yeah.
Right? It might not be that it is that fundamentally different as I positioned. Hmm. But, you know, if you go with me on my theory here, is that joy is something that doesn't, it feels like you can't, it's hard to turn that into a generic thing. For everybody. Like, people find their own moments that works for them or not. And so aiming to provide the potential for those moments is less directive and more about an atmosphere where those things can happen.
Okay, I think that's fair.
And so that might be a more instructive way for people to feel that, like, I'm doing a good job because people can find joy in it. You know, not because this leap is so fun.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Shopping for books is fun because having piles of books brings me joy.
Huh.
Yeah, that's good. A lot of times, when you think about your memories of games, people say that was fun. But that's not really what they mean all the time.
Yeah.
Right? And you think back on like, oh, wow, like you're so pleased to have played that or had that experience, but you're not thinking of any one particular part of it all the time. And so you find joy in having done it or something or having it or having experienced it. Hmm. And that can be, it could be atomized. It could be very much about a small part of it, of course.
But right.
Whereas, yeah, fun just feels more mechanical because we've made it mechanical in this industry.
Yeah, it's got a different... Yeah, I guess earlier on the show, I was like, they have similar connotations, but you're right. Like, fun just has... As a game developer, fun has a different connotation than joy. I think we describe joy as an emotion and fun as a goal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the way you're describing it.
But, it really just brings it back to what Ellen was saying at the top, that specificity of language. Like, it's its own box that you build. And it's not a truth, necessarily.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe, yeah. You gotta just understand it's a box that you can deconstruct and then reconstruct.
And context is what makes it real.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay, that's our show. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Visit us on Twitter, @nicegamesclub, where Dale tweets about game dev resources and interviewing future employers. We like hearing from you, so tweet back. Or stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Next week, we'll be looking at wikis and guides and milestone builds. But that's it for this week. So until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice. Hi, Eric.
Hi.
What are you playing these days?
Elden Ring.
Yes.
Baby.
Thank you.
'Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.